I want to talk to you this morning about something from the Old Testament. Three young men named Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. I know those names probably don't sound familiar to you. But I want to talk about them this morning. They were three Jewish men who were taken into Babylon about the same time that Daniel was. And God's wonderful story of love was manifested in their lives as well, as God demonstrated His love for them, and they certainly did demonstrate their love for God. These three men wouldn't bend. They would not compromise the will of God, we're told. They wouldn't bow. They would not bow their knees to the idol made of gold, and they wouldn't burn. They were protected by the fourth man in the fire. These three men were put in a fire, but there was a fourth man there that prevented them from being burned in view of their faith. And while we do not have any promise of miraculous protection today, we do have the promise of spiritual protection so long as we manifest the same kind of faith that characterized these three men. So we're going to look at these three men, and we're going to look briefly at the fourth man in the fire and talk a little bit about him. But in connection mainly with these three men, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, first of all, Daniel chapter 1 talks about the fact that they would not bend, though they were pressured to do so. They, along with Daniel. In chapter 1, verse 1, beginning in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, and he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Now Jehoiakim was not the last king of Judah. His son Jehoiachin reigned after him, but only for a short while. And Jehoiachin's brother, or perhaps his uncle, and I'm not sure, things like Chronicles says one and King says the other, but Zedekiah was Judah's last king, and Zedekiah was king by appointment of Nebuchadnezzar. He was really a puppet king. And Jehoiakim was apparently the last king who was king in Judah by appointment of God. These others were appointed either by the people without God's necessary approval, or appointed in the case of Jehoiakim by the king of Egypt. And so these last three kings were all evil, and because of the evil of Manasseh, previous to Josiah, God had already announced that he was going to deliver the southern kingdom into captivity in Babylon. Now, with these events, the captivity doesn't seem to have begun yet, but it is soon to follow. But we see in verse 3 beginning that King Nebuchadnezzar wants to train some young Jewish men who have much going for them, some favorable men, some of the top level young men in Judah. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his unit, to bring some of the children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles. He wants only the cream of the crop, the most educated men from Judah, and they would fall in those three classifications. Young men whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. So they're going to educate these young men in the way of the Chaldeans. But he wants men who have already been young men, who are already educated over there in Jerusalem. Again, the cream of the crop, educationally speaking. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. So he wants them one day to be servants of his, but they're going to have to go through some intensive training. They're going to have to learn the language of the Chaldeans. They're going to have to learn the culture, and they're going to have to adapt to that culture before he allows them to serve. Now, Jews had been given many dietary restrictions and other commands that made some of these things not only foreign to them, but absolutely opposed to what God had commanded them to do. And these young men refused to bend to the wishes of King Nebuchadnezzar against the laws that God had established for them. Verse 8, now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name, Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. And it's funny to me that we don't know Daniel's Chaldean name, but we know the Chaldean names of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And we don't know their Jewish names, but we know Daniel's Jewish name. And so I want to make a concerted effort to learn those three names, and I want you to ask me next week if I can remember those names. I'm going to try to do that, because I might not next week. I'll remember that recognition of Daniel, because I've known those three names all my life. But that's how they are known popularly. But yet Daniel is not known by Belteshazzar, but by Daniel. So these are the three names we're going to go by: Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Those are their Hebrew names. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. But why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. Now, since he mentions faces, plural, Daniel's not just speaking on his own behalf, but on behalf of the other young Jewish men that are going to be treated in this way. Some of those things that the king ate were not allowed to be eaten by the Jews. They couldn't eat catfish, for example. When I was 30 years old before I learned out how good catfish was. I couldn't get beyond that ugly look of the live catfish. But they couldn't eat catfish because catfish don't have catfish. Couldn't eat pork. I've known all my life how good pork is. And I'm glad I wasn't born as a citizen of Abraham, I'd be content. But they couldn't eat pork. There are several things they could not eat because of their dietary restrictions that they're not called upon to eat. And Daniel says, you know, Let us have some carte blanche here. Let us have a little freedom here so as not to impose this diet on us. So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had sent over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Vegetables they could eat. It was some of those meats they couldn't eat, and some fish that they couldn't eat. So give us a test here. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portions of the king's delicacies. And as you see this, so deal with your servants. That is us. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward sent away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams, so God blessed these young men, including Daniel, beyond which they had already blessed them providentially. He gave them wisdom, he gave them knowledge, he gave them skill in literature and wisdom, and Daniel in particular, he gave them understanding in all visions and dreams, and of course that comes into play in chapter 2, the visions and dreams. Now, at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, this would be after the 3 years, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. So here were these three men that were not born to eat the delicacies that were appointed from the Jews. They were allowed to eat, they were basically allowed to be vegetarian during those days. And yet they were far more impressed, the king, than those who ate what he ate. And so they served before the king. They became his special servant. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. And so, we see these four men were blessed. Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah and I can't even remember right now. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They would not compromise the will of God concerning the dietary restrictions that God had placed upon them. They could eat vegetables, and so that's what they ate. They couldn't eat some of the meats, and so they refused to eat those meats. Perhaps some of the seasonings that were used in some of those foods were also prohibited to them. But they wouldn't bend. They wouldn't bow down. They wouldn't bend. They wouldn't give in to those demands because God had told them what they could and couldn't eat. Not only that, but they wouldn't bow. And when you look at chapter 3 and see the details of how that they refused to bow down to a golden image that Nebuchadnezzar made. Now between 1 and 3 is Daniel chapter 2, which talks about the image, and Daniel features there, but not the three boys that we're looking at. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. These are all the officials throughout the realm, federal officials and state officials and local officials. These are men, government men, basically. And this would include the servants of Nebuchadnezzar. It includes Hananiah and those other two. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. They're going to dedicate this thing. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages." Because they spoke a variety of languages. Remember, Babylon had basically taken over the territory formerly occupied by Assyria. And so their countries involved in the kingdom of Babylon spoke a variety of languages. But it doesn't matter, so they're speaking apparently in fact, probably got translators there. He said, "Is that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music?" There's a lot of pomp and circumstance involved here because of the dedication of this image. "You shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up." And of course, we know that the Jews were forbidden to worship any image, even if it represented God himself, they were forbidden. "And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace." So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Now when it says, they all did, that's a general statement, not a universal statement. "Therefore, at that certain time, Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up." Now, they would refuse to worship Nebuchadnezzar himself. Why would they now bow down and worship this golden idol that represented Nebuchadnezzar? They will not do it. It was forbidden to them, and they would not bow. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up?" That he can't believe it. He can't believe this report. "Surely these three men that I have chosen as special servants would honor me in this way, because I have given them these privileges that not everybody has received. And this is how they repay me, by refusing to worship the image," which would be also the refusal to worship him. Now, if you're a lady at the time, you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which God has made, good, he's going to give him another chance. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who is delivering you from my hand? No God can deliver you. You're in my hands now. You're not over there where the God of Judah could save you. And remember, these people, all of Israel's neighbors, had these territorial concepts of God. They thought the God of Israel was ruling into that area, and that's where he was. Of course, the northern kingdom of Israel gave lip service to the one true and living God, but they also worshiped the false God. And Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, had set up all in the feast days to the feast days God had ordained. All in the places of worship to the places of worship God had ordained. All in the times of worship than the ones God had ordained, so the people wouldn't go down to Judah and Jerusalem. And so Jeroboam's son of Nebat immediately plunged that northern kingdom into idolatry, and they never looked back, never had a good king. God allowed them to exist for hundreds of years. Finally, he allowed them to be destroyed. And there was never any promise to restore the northern kingdom as such. The southern kingdom, they would have several bad kings, and then there would be a good king who would bring in some reforms. Josiah was the last good king. His reforms are more far-reaching than any of his predecessors who had reformed the worship. He got rid of more high places than any other king had done. But it's a little too late. God had already announced during the time of Manasseh's reign that he was going to deliver them up to Babylon, that they would be in captivity for 70 years. But he was still God. He wasn't just the God of Judah. He was the one true and living God. He was God over heaven and earth. He was the creator of heaven and earth. But Nebuchadnezzar, he thinks, well, I'm not taking you away from there. He can't protect you over here. But the one true living God can protect those who worship and serve him no matter where they are. Who is the God who will deliver you from my hand? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your God, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. It doesn't matter if he doesn't deliver. He can deliver us. And we believe he will. But if he does at that time, we're not going to worship you. We're not going to serve your God. We're not going to worship the gold image which you have set up. And so they wouldn't bend the dietary restrictions God had given them and lower themselves to eat what was provided for them over there. They wouldn't bow, they refused to bow down before this golden image. And they wouldn't burn because of the fourth man in the fire. In verse 19, again, then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. It was already hot. But he was so incensed by the refusal of these three men to bow down and worship the idol and don't get done for them. Because they had privileges the common citizen of Babylon didn't have. He was so incensed. He commanded that they heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. So if it was burning already at 1,000 degrees, it was now burning at 7,000 degrees. I don't know what the temperature was, but seven times more than it was usually heated. That's how full of fury he was toward these three men. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. That is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. I believe we got it. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, they weren't cast into the furnace. They just had to get close enough to it to catch them in that the fire got out and got them. They were burned up. He said, well, here maybe it's going to be even worse on Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning, fiery furnace. Well, what happened? Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste, and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered, said to the king, true, O king, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, just three of them. Look in, and I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Now, probably he was not thinking of the Messiah who would come, of whom Moses and all the other prophets had spoken. He probably said something more like a son of one of the gods, and that's how some translations render that. But he's saying it must be deity. Only a divine personage could be in there and be protecting three boys. And so that, I believe, is what he means. And I believe it was the Messiah, by the way. But I don't think he recognized that. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego came from the midst of the fire. Not only were they protected, but they could hear him as he shouted into the fire. And if you've ever been near a fire, you know the fire that hot would be a roaring fire. It would be making a lot of noise. But they heard it. And they came in the midst of the fire. And the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together. And they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected. And the smell of fire was not on them. That was protection, wasn't it? And they weren't dressed in asbestos suits. They didn't know about no asbestos back then. And so, but they were protected. Not even the smell of fire on them when they come out of that furnace. Not their hair was thin. Nor were their garments affected by the fire at all. This had to make an impression on Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word, and yielded their bodies that they did not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Nebuchadnezzar, because at this point a believer in the one true and living God, he knows that the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is not merely a territorial God who could not have influence beyond the land of Judah. I don't know how much he really appreciates that he is the one true and living God. But he certainly recognizes that he has more power than any of the gods that the Babylonians worship. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or language that speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. He does not deny the existence of other gods. Because none of the gods can deliver like this. No other God. Because them other people that cast into that burning fire, they were consumed. Even the men who threw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire were consumed by the fire. So the gods of Babylon could not protect the servants of the king. And so he knows that if he's not the one true and living God, he is the most powerful God that exists. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Now, we haven't been given dietary restrictions in the New Covenant like they were given under the Old Covenant. Well, we couple can't eat anything sprinkled. Everything needs blood. Those are New Testament commandments, not just Old Testament commandments. But other than that, we're free to eat fish that have no scales, and I'm glad of that. Have been since I was 30 years old. We can eat pork, and I'm glad of that. Have been all my life. But we are not to conduct ourselves in a worldly manner. Paul told the Romans, and us through them,
We were not to be conformed to this world, but to be transformed by the renewing of our mind, that we may prove what is a good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We're to stand different from the world. We're to stand separate from the world. God separated us when we obeyed the gospel, but it's us to remain separate by our continual obedience to God, by obeying the commands that He has issued to us, the acts of worship, and the way we conduct ourselves.